Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 336th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for 28 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell. We're broadcasting live, as usual, from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri. Wurundjeri. I've just learnt the proper pronunciation. Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we're back on the theme of democracy and how it is or isn't happening in Australia.
Yeah, we regularly reflect on the ways in which we are being governed and have wondered whether Western parliamentary democracies, including Australia's, and their associated capitalist free market economies are really the best ways to run societies, the real, where humanity has actually come up with historically.
Yeah, despite the lie that's put out that there is no alternative.
Yes, abbreviated in TINA. Mm-hmm. And we also realise that such reflections on governance may sound like the classic deck chairs rearranging on the already sinking Titanic when we pose such questions with all the awfulnesses going on at present. Just recently we heard the shocking promise by the president of a country often referred to as having invented democracy, the US, wanting to eradicate Iranian civilization, saying a whole civilization will die tonight on the radio. And after hastily agreeing to a ceasefire the next day
or
so.
That was on social media, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We saw the US as partner in that promised eradication and also guilty of ongoing genocide. The country of Israel, another presumed model democracy, continued to attack Lebanon, killing hundreds of people on the first day of that ceasefire.
Yeah.
And then came the headlines reporting what our Australian democratic government had to say about Trump's gross and scandalous overreach. Albo's statement that Trump's expression was inappropriate. Really completing, I think, the sinking of our Titanic democracy.
Yeah, but it was tempered by just a few media voices warning not to follow crazy, power-hungry US, led by Trump, in its military attacks and political intrusions overseas, suggesting we may even start to extricate ourselves from military alliance with the US. And there were suggestions that this might be just a good time to do it.
Yeah, so let's listen what Amy Remakis had to say in Wednesday's New Daily, reacting to Albanese's statement on Sky News.
So that was Wednesday, the 8th of April. That's
right, yes. Albo, she says, uses a lot of words to say, we are concerned. But Australia is a player in this war. No matter how many people pretend to stick our head in the sand over it. We are not only sharing intelligence, we have sent at least 90 defence personnel, including the SAS, to the United Arab Emirates on standby. We have Australian defence personnel on US submarines and ships. We were among the first nations in the world to back Trump in on this without knowing the legalities, objectives, or even a plan.
Yeah.
And the US is planning on upgrading its military bases in Australia that will allow for additional US bomber rotations. Yeah. End of quote.
Yeah. But there are, I think, signs of a change in government rhetoric. Even while our military is horribly intertwined with the US military. Recently, PM Albanese and his government started to peel a bit away from US government stances in its public rhetoric in relation to the war. So while Trump has threatened to take Iran back to the Stone Age and that a whole civilization will die tonight, as you pointed out, Jacques, our own PM Albanese and Senator Penny Wong openly criticised these statements, along with a range of other world leaders. And on Wednesday's ABC 7:30 report, on the 8th of April, Penny Wong said, quote, "I don't think anyone should be threatening the destruction of a civilization," unquote. Adding, she thinks that's what the Australian people think too. And I'd add that Trump's threatening, it was actually threatening a war crime, which would be condemned anyway. Mm. So Wong also pointed out that people in positions of leadership carry responsibility in what they say, as their words carry weight and have consequences. So no talking like a giant baby, Donald Trump, I guess.
Especially as we know that a large majority of the people in the US are not supporting the Iran war. And remembering that it's the people in democracies that are supposed to rule or govern themselves.
Well, that's what democracy means,
isn't it? Exactly.
So one can only also feel for the Iranian people after all they've suffered under a truly despotic and cruel and sociopathic regime for decades. And you can only imagine their desperation, including those who saw and still see Trump as a potential savior. That's a real measure of their desperation. Mm. But clearly the welfare and democratic rights of the people of Iran are not the priority in this pitiless war, in spite of some of Trump's earlier statements.
Yeah, that's correct. And we also have the ongoing destruction of our ecological livelihoods from all this warfare in its several variations. According to our mainstream media, however, the main concern is whether we will have enough petrol to continue to contribute to that destruction of our ecology.
Yeah, and what it's doing to our cost of living, and I mean cost of living in the short term, because those costs of living, will skyrocket along with the destruction of our ecology into the future if it's not stopped quick, fast. Mm. So no economy on a dead planet, as they say. And meanwhile, military hardware companies and most software companies are making mega bucks off this war.
Phew, so having that out of our chests.
What a relief. We'll get on to the topic of today's programme now.
Yes, here's what we were planning to do and will continue with in today's programme. In spite of our earlier comments about the futility of shoving Titanic deck chairs, we intend to talk about democracy and its meaning and practice, the special occasion being the publication of the 100th quarterly essay, late 2025. It was Sean Kelly's The Good Fight. What does Labour stand for?
So what does Labour stand for? Very timely. The essay addresses a concern of many people that the Albanese Labour government is playing it so safe there may not be any point to it being in power anyway. So to quote from the back cover to the quarterly essay number 100, Kelly gives a definitive account of Albanese's political style and asks what lies behind it. In speaking to a fragmented, disengaged electorate, the PM places a high value on moderation. Often that means ducking fights with entrenched interests. But this runs the risk of embedding an ever more unequal nation led by a government that can seem gutless, unquote. So that appears also to be the price of endeavouring to be the natural party of government all the time, once seen as the preserve of the Liberal Party. And the essay talks about that as well.
Yeah, Sean Kelly is well placed to talk about all of this. He's a well-known political journalist contributing to the 9 media, including The Age, And he has worked for several ministers in previous Labour governments, so he has intimate knowledge of the goings-on in Australian politics. The way in which Australian Labour governments have practiced parliamentary democracy in Australia, being the oldest established party in the country and professing a political position identifying with the section of the people, the people of who are running the democracy, laborers, workers, who in the power structure of capitalist economies tend to occupy the less powerful strata of the population. The democracy's people, particularly the lowest power sections. So Kelly's subtitle, What Does Labour Stand For? Offers an investigation in the workings of our two-party democracy, examining the thinking and practice of one of those two parties, often considered progressive, system-changing, and working in favour of those who have less power and influence in Australian society.
By which you mean, of course, Labour.
Mm-hmm.
But leaving the question of whether its recently softly approach to disrupting the status quo means it's no longer really progressive or system-changing. Yes.
And I'm going to let Jen announce the music, because I know that it's by Boruk, but I don't know the title of the song.
It's Positive Change.
So there we go. Listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we had just started to discuss Sean Kelly's quarterly essay, number 100, The Good Fight, What Does Labour Stand For?
Yeah, and with the suggestion that the Labour Party's cautious approach to creating necessary change means it's no longer really system-changing in any meaningful sense.
Yeah, certainly not system-changing in our ways of thinking about where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very well explored in the responses to Sean Kelly's essay in the following edition of the quarterly essay number 101. That adds affirming and disagreeing aspects to his verdict about the quality of democracy produced by a governing party that really would, could, should stand for ideals closest to what we at Borderlands and at 3CR believe. Ideals at the heart of a system worthy of the adjective democratic, ruled by the people.
Mm-hmm.
In earlier programs, we talked about democracy as a system where the people rule themselves while also rejecting the Hobbesian solution of strong authoritarian leaders who should be better able and ostensibly are needed to prevent everyone fighting everyone else. and to make individuals abide by the rules of the collective they belong to.
Yeah, so we're not looking to that Hobbesian solution of strong authoritarian leaders, which is very relevant given the spread of authoritarianism around the world.
Exactly, and populism and all of those things, exactly. Yeah. So the underlying assumption in Kelly's historical and current analysis of what Labour stands for is that the party came about to counter the established conservative leadership, conservative governance, and the power structure in Australia.
Yeah, so to take the Liberals' prize of being seen as the natural party of government.
Mm, that's right.
But as Kelly points out, there are hazards, significant hazards in chasing this objective.
That's right.
So thinking about such hazards, I saw a few implications in Kelly's essay and the responses to it. So, number one, is there a tipping point where the Labor Party has maintained power over time, but in the process has sacrificed the very reason for being in power? Mm-hmm. And if there is a tipping point, which I think there must be some sort of tipping point or points, mm-hmm. how do you identify it? This may be related to non-negotiable principles and identifying when a line has been crossed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's right.
So number two, similarly, when does incremental change or incrementalism become ineffective and hardly even worth doing?
Mm-hmm, that's correct, yep.
For example, putting off education reform to 2034.
34?
Yes. I think that's looking at the Gonski reforms.
That's right.
So that a whole cohort of primary school children will not have benefited from the needed change. They'll go in prep and finish primary school without even seeing that change.
Mm-hmm.
And as 2034 comes around, perhaps no one will benefit given changing circumstances and imperatives over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a long time. One day is a long time in politics, but so is 80 years.
That's correct.
So number three, another implication I saw, is the essay foregrounds government's role in leading and facilitating change through public narrative, rather than waiting to see what the polls say, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling the wind, you know, wetting your finger and feeling the wind, mm-hmm. and following from that. So the essay foregrounds government's role in leading and facilitating public change through public narrative.
Mm-hmm.
While this narrative can provide progressive leadership, it, of course, can also be negative. So think Trump's MAGA and other nihilistic ramblings, but also further back, mm-hmm. who was our wonderful Prime Minister who demonised refugees by saying they throw their babies in the water.
Yeah, Mr. Howard.
Thank you. The Tampa incident.
Yeah, terrible.
So evidently government narratives can prop up and propagate neoliberal ways of running systems too, subjecting everything to the market's profit motives and everything that every change we seek to make for the benefit
gets
putting
reduced.
That to the profit motive.
Yeah, get produced to that, yeah.
So Sean Kelly gives an example of Albanese saying he believes in markets as a priority, top priority, a narrative that helps justify inequity and exploitation.
Yes, as we know, because we live in capitalism after all. And whilst there were different emphases in the responses to Kelly's essay in the next issue of the Quarterly Essays, it feels as if the assumption that Labour came into existence to counter the usual conservative power structure in Australia is accepted and agreed with.
Except for a couple of historians who mm-hmm. responded, who argued that, in fact, historically the Labour movement and the Labour Party came first.
Yes, that's right.
Before the conservative counter-movement in party politics.
Yeah, that's right. We forget that kind of a history, that Labour was, in fact, a reaction and a resistance against the existing conservative leadership. Interestingly.
Or it was against the conservatives in power, but not at a political party level.
Not yet, no, that's true. Interestingly, though, there was really nothing critically said about the very existence and workings of the two-party system itself, which we have been dealing with quite a number of times in our programs, and whether such construction is even capable of doing democracy meaningfully.
Yeah, that's true. And that presumption of a two-party system, which isn't in our constitution.
That's right.
It's something we've critiqued quite a bit on and off.
Yes, in several of our earlier Think Again programs, we questioned the democratic potential of the two-party system, especially since they operate in what we call a lethal triangle.
Yeah, the triangle, of course, of two main parties and the media.
That's right, and powerful media. And
the
certainly
media feeding off it and promoting
that's
it.
That's right. The two parties do not operate in a neutral field. They coexist with and are influenced by privately owned mainstream media, now augmented by the misnamed social media. There's nothing much social about them, really.
Anti-social media.
That's right. Which are increasingly infected by a so-called artificial intelligence, manipulating the understanding of the people and the workings of the entire political system within which democracy operates.
Yeah, so, yes, for sure. So where we most agree with Kelly's view, I think, is in his assessment of the Albanese government. Early in the essay, he puts it to us, and I'll quote, "Long ago, a Labour elder told me something that has remained in my mind. The mob, he said, expects something more from Labour, more than they expect from the coalition. This has become the single most important way I think about Labour, a way of considering its responsibility to the nation, as well as its political appeal to voters. And yet I find myself now uncertain, wondering if it is still as true or as important as it once seemed. Do voters still want more from Labour? And if they do, is Labour still capable of providing it?" Unquote.
And particularly also we need to think about what more means, really.
Yeah, and also a lot of younger people listening to this would be a bit bemused because they haven't experienced that old Labour.
Absolutely.
So they're saying, what's all the fuss about? They wouldn't even be looking to Labour for change.
And they would particularly do so when they are looking for housing, as an example. And we would add that we expect from Labour governments that they lift the level of debate and that by lifting it force the other of the two-party duo to lift their game as well as that of all other parties that may pop up and the independents that join the fray. It should lift the general level of the political debate in the country, really of all debates, including the economic and ecological debates and ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dr. Tracy Westerman. She shared on her LinkedIn link.
In your little, one of your few dabbles into social media.
That's right. And I quote her, "The really dangerous part isn't Hansen or Trump themselves. It's that their supporters have been successfully convinced that being against knowledge and evidence is somehow being authentic and brave.
Mm.
That questioning a politician's relevant expertise is snobbery rather than basic accountability. Somehow, when it comes to the people managing the economy, health policy and indigenous affairs, suddenly expertise is called suspicious. It's not anti-elitism. It's anti-accountability." End of quote. And finally, coming back to our introductory statement about the ongoing awfulnesses, and we're referring to the Iran crisis and all of that, and Lebanon crisis.
Lebanon.
The critical moment we're in is well formulated in Michael West Media last Wednesday by Andrew Brown, saying that this moment should be, and I quote him now, "where we stop being polite. Because being polite has not worked.
Mm-hmm.
Polite got us a prime minister who calls an illegal war of aggression constructive. Polite got us a media landscape that blames the energy minister for a conflict that blocked the Strait of Hormuz. Polite got us a political class so thoroughly captured by Washington and Tel Aviv that it cannot find the most basic, elementary words to say that what is happening is wrong, that it is costing us, and that we did not consent to it. So we need to express the political and economic cost, reveal these responsibilities, and the media who run for cover, and we need to continue to break the silence about what is really happening. Mm. End of quote. And I'm saying that managed consent by our Labour government should stop if it is to remain worthy of its name and expressed values.
Yeah, yes. Well, after all, good government doesn't mean manipulating the public through media soundbites and keeping us in the dark through secrecy of information or through just following opinion polls to do and say the most popular thing on the day.
Mm.
Yeah, so government surely is about leadership, leading the narrative and appealing to our best selves, as well as representing us, not manipulating us.
That's right.
Which is, of course, what Senator Wong meant in her rare implied chastising of Donald Trump, that what leaders say matters. Their words have consequences, for better or for worse.
Totally agree. And as Alison Pennington, my favourite response to the Kelly essay in the Quarterly Essay 101, as she suggests, and I quote her because it's really worth listening to her, "Contest and conflict between different economic interests has been airbrushed out of Australian politics. For decades, people have been told that growth, higher profits, better government services, and rising living standards were all possible all at once. But with inequality exploding, with an outdated tax system making it worse, and Australia's social compact with wage earners unravelling due to housing affordability, it is impossible for Albanese's Labour to continue claiming these are still mutually reinforcing goals. But with the exception of the industrial relations reforms in the first term of government, the consensus politics of the hawk model prevails through gritted teeth smiles." End of quote.
Very good. So on to our community announcements. That's probably enough for us to think about for today. On to our community announcements. I thought I'd say a few words about the People's Plan for Footscray. Mm. So Borderlands has been busy leading the People's Plan for Footscray, which I think is self-explanatory. People's Plan for Footscray, and Borderlands' contribution is part of a bigger effort with a range of important projects in the western suburbs of Melbourne, supported by the Greater Melbourne Foundation. And the hope is that the People's Plan for Footscray can be something of an example of how people power can be mobilised, supported, and have impact. So you can get more information about that on the Borderlands website, which is the website address has changed, borderlandscooperative.net. And on the 21st of March, for example, of what it's been doing, 40 workers, advocates and activists participated in the Footscray community mapping exercise. And over the next few months, the People's Plan for Footscray will be supporting locals to host community yarns and developing a number of small-scale projects. So if you'd like to host a community yarn, contact Terry Sumulis, that's Terry, T-E-R-R-I, at borderlandscooperative.net.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you want to send us any ideas for your vision for a better world in 2050, please email Borderlands on info@borderlandscooperative.net. And remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milka Mana by King Stingray. Above my
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.